crystallized image, Deesra could see his self-satisfied smile.
I'm going to start the Empire back on its road to glory.
Tears?
I have to go, Your Excellency. We shouldn't stay on transmission too long, even with good encryption. Don't worry. I'm not planning to take the Relentless to Coruscant or anything so foolish. I just want to spend a little more time here. Call it a hunch.
In my experience, relying on hunches is a fast trip to the short end of the odds, Deesra growled. But Tears had him, and they both knew it. Short of sending what was left of the Braxton Sector fleet to chase him down, there was precious little Deesra could do at this point to countermand him.
How long are you planning to stay?
Tears shrugged.
A couple of weeks, maybe more. It depends.
On what?
On whether I get the reaction I'm looking for. I'll be sure to let you know if and when it happens.
Good. If and when the New Republic fleet appears over Bastion, I'll be sure to let you know.
Tears smiled.
Thank you, Your Excellency. I knew you'd understand. Goodbye.
The image flickered and vanished. Deesra leaned back in his chair, glaring at the hologram pod. This was getting out of hand. It was getting way out of hand. He'd let Tears run off restrainer bolt long enough. It was time to reel the guardsmen in a little and remind him who was master and who was servant. At the moment, Deesra wasn't exactly sure how to do that, but he would think of something.
Chapter 20.
The Diamalan senator finished his report and sat down again on the witness bench beside Lando. And for Leia, the Grand Convocation Chamber had suddenly become very cold. The impossible had happened. Grand Admiral Thrawn had returned.
I do not see the problem,
the Lacassian senator called out, her high-pitched voice making the chamber's sound system squeal.
We are many. The Empire are few. Let us gather together and move against it. And this time, let us not stop until we have utterly destroyed it.
If you think that's even an option anymore, then you're a fool,
the Shronk senator countered.
I saw full left-handed what this Grand Admiral Thrawn did to my world's defenses 10 standard cycles ago. And with nothing more than 7 Katana Fleet Dreadnoughts as his weapons, he wouldn't have announced his return if he weren't already prepared to receive the full slamming brunt of our closed right hand.
They have no more than 1,000 worlds remaining,
a senator who Leia couldn't identify put in scornfully.
With no more than 100 Star Destroyers and a few thousand lesser ships. Do you suggest that such a pitiful force could withstand the full thunder of our trampling hooves?
You don't know this, Thrawn. Please,
President Gavrasim cut in.
All of you. We of the Council certainly understand your concerns and your fears. However, at this point, I would argue you to ponder this news without jumping to either hasty conclusions or premature actions.
A preemptive strike would not be a premature action,
a huffy voice insisted.
I agree with the Lacassian, Senator, that we must move immediately against the remnants of the Empire.
Yes!
The Lacash squealed.
Grand Admiral Thrawn nearly defeated us once. We cannot allow him the time he needs to attack us again.
He's already had all the time he needs,
the Shronk shot back.
Weren't you listening to what I said? He wouldn't have revealed himself if he wasn't ready for us.
But the situation isn't the same as it was 10 years ago,
Leia reminded them, striving to keep her own voice steady and to keep the growing sense of dread in the chamber from feeding into her own fears.
Back then, Thrawn still had nearly 25% of the old Empire to work with. As has already been pointed out, his resources are almost non-existent now.
So let us take the rest away from him!
A voice shouted.
Let us destroy him, now!
We cannot destroy him,
Gabrysom said.
Even if we wanted to, which I'm not yet convinced is the proper response to his offer.
Why not?
The Lakash demanded.
The New Republic has far more warships than the Empire.
The Merdotian senator roared something in his own language.
Do you imply you would seriously consider allowing him to interrogate New Republic officials?
The translation whispered in Leia's ear.
That way lies madness.
He doesn't want all of us,
the Kian Thar senator pointed out.
He wants only the buttons.
There was another roar.
Do you genuinely believe it would end with the Bothans?
The translation demanded.
If so, your path is toward madness.
Gabrysom tapped a key on his board, shutting down the chamber sound system. The shouting died reluctantly away, and he turned the system back on.
Please, let us keep our focus clear in this debate. Certainly, we have no intentions of permitting an Imperial official to interrogate the leaders of any New Republic member world. However, it is equally unreasonable at this point to suggest a concerted attack against the Empire. While it is true that a state of war technically exists between us, recent hostilities have been few and mostly accidental. More to the point, even though our forces outnumber theirs, those forces are at the moment widely dispersed across the galaxy.
He shook his mane in a gesture of mild reproof.
Oh, attempting, as you are all aware, to bring some measure of stability to the New Republic against the stirrings of hundreds of threatening internal wars.
Convenience!
The Garouche senator half-whistled sarcastically.
For the Empire, at least.
They're probably the ones inciting all the wars,
someone suggested with obvious contempt.
That would be just like Thrawn's style, fanning the fires of stupid hatred and primitive genocidal nonsense.
Do not call our long struggle stupid,
the Forshul senator rumbled.
And as for genocide, I find it highly significant that our oppressors, the Vosli, stand ready to excuse the Bothans' own actions against the Ka'abasi.
It is the duty of all right-thinking beings to recognize such an attitude as a danger, not only to my people, but also to all of Emini's sector.
Gabrysom touched the cutoff switch again. And the Forshul's voice dropped into a distant and indistinct voice, booming from her section of the chamber.
I thank the senator from Emini's sector for her comments,
the president said.
I would also remind her that this is not the time for such speeches.
President Gabrysom, I would speak!
A familiar voice simmering with familiar anger rolled across the chamber, filling the space even with the sound system turned off. Leia looked that direction. Jik Duxono, the Ashuri senator, was on his feet, his whole body trembling with the physical rage that in his species always accompanied deep thought.
You may speak,
Gabrysom told him, turning the sound system on again.
I would caution you that as this chamber does not wish to hear a tirade against the Prosley, we also do not wish to hear one against the Diamala.
I intend no tirade,
Duxono barked.
I wish merely to remind that chamber that we have only the Diamalan senator's word that he did indeed face this Thrawn. I would also remind the senators that he ended his testimony moments ago with an urgent that we put the Bothan matter behind us, without punishing the guilty, in order that we might face this supposed new threat. The reappearance of Grand Admiral Thrawn is hardly a supposed threat, Senator Doxomo.
Maya Tamiya countered, with typical Diamalan calm.
Merely because he was stopped the last time, before reaching any Ishori worlds, does not guarantee your safety should he be allowed the freedom to advance again.
Do not accuse me of thinking only of my own worlds. The Ishori seek the safety of all peoples in the New Republic. But at the same time, we also demand justice for those peoples.
The Diamala people support all forms of justice,
Maya Tamiya said.
We merely do not consider blind revenge to be justice.
Only a blind observer would consider our demands to be revenge. But that is not the issue here,
he added quickly, as the tip of Gaverson's wing moved toward the cutoff switch.
The issue is that you have made a statement to this chamber which conveniently adds weight and thrust to your political side, but which is unsupported by any independent sources.
Do you not consider former General Lando Calrissian to be an independent source?
Maya Tamiya asked.
By your own testimony, he came to you asking for Diamalan military assistance. Given that, do you really expect us to consider his words unbiased?
On behalf of Captain Calrissian, I resent the implications of that statement, Senator,
Leia said, finding herself on her feet.
He's been a stalwart friend and ally, both of the New Republic and the Rebel Alliance before that. If Lando says he saw Thrawn, then he did.
Once he was a friend and ally. Once he was also a smuggler and gambler, experienced at cheating and lying to obtain what he wanted. Now he is a businessman running a sub-ocean mining operation whose profits depend on his obtaining Diamalan assistance. So tell us, Kautzka or Gada Solo, which of his two backgrounds is he drawing on?
Leia looked over at Lando, sitting grim-faced and silent behind Gaverson.
I've known Lando for 16 years. I will vouch personally for his character.
Fine,
Duxono said with a snort.
You may vouch for him all you like, Counselor. Suppose then, for the sake of argument, that he saw a person on that Star Destroyer. But was it Thrawn? Or was it something else?
Leia frowned, trying to read his thoughts across the chamber, but all she could get was the outward anger, masking everything beneath it.
Are you suggesting that the Empire faked the meeting?
It could well have been a fake,
the Ishori said, glaring at Maya Tamiya.
But I do not necessarily put the blame on the Empire. We all know that there are numerous Imperial Star Destroyers within New Republic territory. Some even in private hands, if rumors are to be believed. And as I have already pointed out, the message that was supposedly delivered by this supposed Thrawn conveniently supports the Diamalan stance on the bottom issue. Coincidence or careful manipulation?
The ability to manipulate his enemies was one of Thrawn's greatest talents,
Phalia put in.
A talent not unique to him. The Bothans, for one example, are also masters of the art. So are the Diamala.
The man in the Grand Admiral's uniform knew about my visit to Merkur 10 years ago,
Lando said.
The only people who were there at that time were Thrawn and his stormtrooper escort.
Not true. By your own statement, former General Solo was also there.
Leia felt a sudden stirring of anger.
Are you suggesting that
Alf was also?
Duxono continued, cutting Leia off with a dark look.
The smuggler, Talon Card.
Leia threw a glance at Lando.
Card wouldn't be a part of anything like this,
she insisted.
Wouldn't he?
Duxono demanded.
Unlike Captain Calrissian, this Card has never even claimed any loyalty to the New Republic. He's a smuggler, and seller of information. A man whose only concern and loyalty are to profit and gain.
The Ashori drew himself up a little taller, a finger stabbing out accusingly toward Leia.
And a man, furthermore, whose chief links to Coruscant have been to such people as Captain Calrissian and you yourself, Counselor Organa Solo. So now, tell us, where exactly do you stand on the Bothan issue?
The question took Leia completely by surprise.
What do you mean?
She asked, trying to stall for time.
You know what I mean. Tell us where you stand, Counselor Organa Solo. Do you believe that full reparations and justice should be demanded of the Bothans? Or do you, like the Diamorin Senator, prefer to allow the horrific crime to go unpunished? Perhaps even enough to create a situation that would force this chamber to that decision.
We know where she stands,
another angry voice called out.
Did not her bonded mate, Han Solo, fire an appeasable protest at the clan's building on Bothawee?
That has not been proved, Senator Shabathi.
Gaberson broke in sternly, coming to Leia's rescue.
And your accusations are likewise uncalled for, Senator Duxono. As I've already said, this is not the time nor the place for yet another debate on the Karmas issue. Both of you be seated, please.
But the damage had already been done, Leia realized as she sat down again. In a single masterful stroke, Duxono had not only cast serious doubt on Maya Tamiya's story, but also managed to undermine her own credibility as well. From now on, any attempt she made to defend either Lando or the Diamolin Senator would merely feed into the suspicions he had just planted. Infighting, suspicions, divisiveness. Yes, it was indeed Thrawn's style.
Ooh, this seems a good time to move on to the Admiralty's report on the overall military situation in the New Republic,
Gaverson continued.
Admiral Drayson?
The Admiral stepped to the podium beside Gaverson, and as he did, a discreet flicker of light caught Leia's eye. The small green comm indicator on her chair arm was flashing. She frowned, throwing a surreptitious glance around the chamber. No one but her family and closest aides were supposed to have this comm frequency, and they all had strict instructions that it was to be used only in an emergency. But in that case, they were also supposed to key the indicator to a 3-flash pattern, and at the moment it was merely blinking steadily. Stifling a flash of annoyance, she activated her chair's privacy field. Drayson's voice dropped to a tenth of its normal volume as she swiveled the comm display up from its storage position along the side of her armrest. If this was Anakin asking if he could open a new package of cookies, she promised herself darkly as she touched the switch, he was going to be grounded for a week. Leia Organa Solo. But it wasn't Anakin.
Hello, Leia,
Talon Card said, nodding politely.
I hope I'm not calling at too inconvenient a moment.
Reflexively, Leia pulled the display as close to her as she could. Of all the awkward times for him to call. As a matter of fact, it is inconvenient. I'm in the middle of a Senate meeting.
Then I'll make it short,
he said, his eyes narrowing slightly. He was too smart, and knew her too well, not to know there was more to it than just that.
I have a personal message to deliver to you, one which I'd rather not put on even an encrypted channel. Unfortunately, one of the line directors at Coruscant Space Control feels that I shouldn't be permitted to land.
Leia frowned, Duxono's accusations echoing through her mind. But how could word have gotten out so fast? Do you have his name?
Just his bureaucratic operating number, KTR-44875. He wouldn't even give me that, incidentally. I had to pull it off his ID plate. He's an Ashori, if that helps any.
Leia grimaced. That explained how the word had gotten out so fast. It does. The Ashuri senator has just finished accusing you and Lando of conspiring with the Diamala to get the Bothans off the hook on the Ka'amas matter. He tried to rope me in on it too, just for good measure.
I see,
Card said, pursing his lips.
And so, of course, here I am, calling on you for help. My apologies for the bad timing.
It's not your fault, Leia said, glaring over the top of the display at the chamber and its hundreds of human and alien faces staring down in her direction. She was not going to let them dictate who her friends and associates could be. You tell this Ashuri line director that I'm giving you permission to land. I'll transmit the order as soon as you're off the comm. You're in the wild card?
Yes,
Card said.
But I could come down in a shuttle if you think that would be more politic.
Leia snorted. Ruffled feelings are the least of my worries at the moment. Do you know where the West Champion landing field is? It's about 200 kilometers south of the Imperial Palace, near the Minari Mountains.
I have it on the map,
Card confirmed, eyeing her closely.
Is this something new, or has the Ka'amas debate simply taking a more vicious turn?
I don't know yet. It could be either, depending on who you listen to. We have a place on the 30th floor of the Orowood Tower, about 20 kilometers east of the landing field. I'll call the Nogri caretakers and have them let you in. We'll be out there as soon as I can get away tonight.
Sounds cozy,
he said, still gazing thoughtfully at her.
Not to mention secluded.
It is, Leia agreed, wincing slightly. It wasn't hard to guess his thoughts. That despite her protestations to the contrary, she didn't want to risk being seen with him anywhere near the Imperial Palace. You'll understand why I want to meet there when I tell you what's happened.
Of course. Would it be all right if I use the comm and data retrieval equipment at your retreat until you arrive? Just to keep myself amused, of course.
Leia smiled. And to see what you can dig out of the government archives? He shrugged.
I might learn something new. You never know.
I'm sure it's harder for you to learn something you didn't already know than it is for most of us, Leia said dryly. All right, I'll clear it with the Nogri when I call them.
Thank you. I'll see you later. Goodbye.
Goodbye. With a sigh, she keyed off the comm. Infighting, suspicions, divisiveness. Yes, it was Thrawn's style, all right. She could only wonder what he had planned for them next. Switching the comm back on again, she keyed for Coruscant Space Control. All in all, Carib Devis thought as he gazed across the colorful fields of tall grain rippling across Dorchess Valley, it had been a good day. It really had. The oppressive summer sun that blazed so steadily down onto Packrit Minor during the growing season had been hiding coyly behind the clouds for most of the day, giving relief from the usual heat. The clouds hadn't burned off until late afternoon, just in time for the sun to disappear for an hour and a half behind Packrit Minor's far more densely populated sister world of Packrit Major. By the time it had reemerged, the extra heat was actually almost welcome. There were still some problems in the fields themselves, of course. But that was all part of a farmer's life. Carib and his brothers had had to drive out yet another colony of worms that had tried to make their home among the interlocked tall grain roots, and had had to deal with a spot of white blight that could have wiped out the entire crop within days if it hadn't been caught. But it had been caught, and the worms had been rooted out, and none of the droids had broken down or even gone cranky. And the crops were actually ahead of growing schedule for a change. No, it had been a good day. And as Carib propped his feet up to point toward the magnificent sunset and sipped at a well-earned glass of Ra'ala mineral water, he decided that it was indeed good to be alive. A motion to his right caught his eye. His brother Sabine coming toward the house in that battered old land speeder of his. Lacey had probably invited Sabine and his family over to dinner. She was always forgetting to tell him things like that. But no. Sabine was alone in the vehicle. And as the landspeeder came closer, Carib could make out the expression on his brother's face. He was waiting at the foot of the path by the time Sabmin brought the landspeeder to a dusty halt. "What's wrong?" he asked without preamble.
"It's happened,"
Sabmin said, his voice a husky whisper.
"I was up at the cave, and, well, it's happened."
Carib glanced back up the path at the house. Lacey was visible in the kitchen window, carefully pulling the dinner roast out of the focus cooker.
"Walk with me," he said.
He led the way down the path toward the edge of the fields.
"You confirm the message was legitimate?"
he asked.
"First thing,"
Sabmin said soberly.
"Carried all the proper imperial coats."
Carib winced. It had been a long time since the word imperial had been used in this part of Pakrik Minor.
"Then I guess it's time,"
he said, a strange sensation in the pit of his stomach. After 10 years of quiet waiting, they were once again being called to service.
"Have you said anything to the others yet?"
"No. I came straight here,"
Sabmin said.
"But there's more."
He glanced around, as if afraid someone might be listening from among the neat rows of tall grain.
"The activation order came in over the name of Grand Admiral Thrawn."
Carib felt his jaw drop.
"That's impossible,"
he hissed.
"Thrawn is dead."
"That's what everyone said,"
Sabmin agreed soberly.
"All I know is that his name is on the order."
They'd reached the first row of stalks now.
"It could be a lie,"
Carib said, turning sideways to ease between the rows, sniffing the familiar sour, musky aroma rising around him as his tanned, leatherous vest brushed across the leaves.
"Or else a trick."
"Hardly a trick they could keep up,"
Sabmin pointed out.
"Even using old holo recordings of him in transmissions wouldn't fool anyone for long."
"True," Carib said, stopping beside a nearly ripe stalk and touching a finger to the tall green string peeking coyly from a gap in its sheath.
"Grand Admiral Thrawn,
who had turned around 5 years of steady decline and brought the Empire to within sight of total victory.
He realized, of course, that this could change everything."
"I don't see how,"
Sabmin said.
"The fact still remains that we were planted here for the express purpose of being ready to cause havoc if and when we were called to do so."
He stroked the tall grain string.
"Well, the planting took root. The crop is ripened. And now they're calling for the harvest."
"Yes,"
Carib said, dropping his hand back to his side. "A harvest of terror and sudden death and destruction, almost certainly directed at the ripe fruit that was Pakrik Major hanging overhead. Pakrik Major and the annual sector-wide conference that had just gotten underway in the capital. A long-delayed strike against the traitors of the rebellion, courtesy of the Empire."
"But that's not my point,"
he told Sabmin.
"My point is that if Thrawn is really back in command, then whatever we're ordered to do won't simply be a grand but meaningless gesture of suicidal defiance. If Thrawn is back, then the Empire might just win."
Sabmin whistled softly.
"You're right,"
he murmured.
"I hadn't even thought about it that way."
"Well, you better stop thinking about it that way,"
Carib warned.
"And we'd better make sure the others do too.
Any idea when the last maintenance check was done on the ties?"
"Not more than a month ago,"
Sabmin said.
"I think it was Dobro who ran it. You want to talk with him tonight?"
"I want to talk with everyone tonight,"
Carib said, sidling out of the tall green rows and starting back up toward the house.
"My place, in 2 hours."
"We can try,"
Sabmin said, falling into a probably unconscious military step beside him.
"Tabrik and Hovarb may not be able to make it, though. 3 of their gaunts went into labor this afternoon."
"The Gaunts can have the litters by themselves,"
Carib said shortly.
"This is important."
Sabmin threw him a frown.
"Oh, come on, Carib. Aren't you overreacting just a little? It's an activation order, not a full-blown attack plan.
If Thrawn is in charge, there won't be a lot of time between the two,"
Carib growled.
"Whatever he's up to, he'll have his timetable shaved down to the half-second."
They walked the rest of the way to Sabmin's vehicle in silence.
"All right, I'll tell him,"
Savmin said, as he climbed in.
They'll be here. Carib sighed. Well, let's make it your place instead, he suggested. It's only 3 minutes by land speeder from there to their barn. They can get back in plenty of time if anything goes wrong with the labor.
Savmin smiled tightly.
Thanks, Carib. We'll see you there.
Chapter 21
There's Lando,
Leia said, pointing out the canopy as Han set their Incom T-81 down on the Orowood Tower's third-level airspeeder pad.
Over there, by the entryway, behind that red cloud car.
Yeah, I see him,
Han grunted, shutting down the repulsor lifts.
I still think this is a bad idea, Leia.
I know you do,
Leia said, taking a moment to look past the lighted landing area at the darkened shrubbery perimeter beyond it. There was no one visible, either to her eyes or her Jedi senses.
And I can't say I completely disagree with you, but he insisted on coming.
You just better hope Duck Sono didn't get wind of it and have someone follow him here,
Han growled, popping the canopy.
You get someone yelling secret meeting, and we'll all have had it.
I know,
Leia said, climbing out of the airspeeder and looking around. There were some airspeeder running lights visible in the sky around them, and the various roads crisscrossing the area around the tower were carrying their usual quota of land speeders. None of the vehicles seemed to be particularly heading their direction. But there were the darkened windows of one of the tower's 5 tapcafs gazing down on them from the 4th floor. Not to mention all the windows of the apartment stretching up into the night sky. If one of those windows concealed someone with a set of macro binoculars... Han clearly had already had the same thought.
We better get inside,
he muttered, taking her arm.
Come on, 3PO. Move it.
Yes, sir,
the golden-skinned droid said hastily, levering himself awkwardly out of the back of the airspeeder and shuffling quickly behind them. That was the first time 3PO had said anything, Leia realized suddenly, since they'd left the Imperial Palace. Had he picked up on Han's mood and was trying to make himself inconspicuous? Or had he been brooding on his own memories of Thrawn's last bid for power? Lando emerged from his half-concealment as they approached.
Han, Leia,
he nodded to them. His usual smile of greeting, Leia noted, was conspicuously absent.
Where's Cod?
He's already here,
Leia told him, as Han keyed the entryway lock.
The Nogri let him in.
Good.
Hunching his shoulders beneath his cloak, Lando threw one last look back into the darkness as he followed Leia in. 38 stories tall, the Orowood Tower had originally been planned to be the nucleus of an elaborate and extensive colony of Alderaanians who had been off-planet when the first Death Star destroyed their world. But though the architects had painstakingly crafted every facet of the tower to fit the Alderaanian style, Coruscant's crowds and near-total land development were simply too alien to their life view for most of the refugees to feel comfortable living there. Though the rest of the project had been abandoned, there had been hopes that enough Alderaanians would remain on Coruscant to keep the tower itself occupied, particularly given its spectacular view of the Minari Mountains. But that final dream had been dealt its death blow by Grand Admiral Thrawn's short-lived but terrifying siege of the planet. When the siege was finally lifted, virtually all the Alderaanians left Coruscant, going to New Alderaan or scattering out among the stars. As one of them had explained to Leia, they had been lucky enough to escape the destruction of one world and had no desire to settle on an even more tempting target. And so the grand experiment had settled into vague obscurity, joining the host of other residential centers clustered beneath the mountains, most of which provided secondary or vacation homes to rich industrialists and government officials. Off-worlders and aliens, most of whom had never even heard of the fabled Oro Woods of Alderaan, let alone ever walked among them. Over the years, the ache of that irony had mostly faded from Leia's heart. Mostly. The turbolift operated with the typical quiet efficiency of Alderaanian construction, depositing them into the lush garden scene that compromised the 30th floor lobby.
No one was visible among the fronds and rock pile water trickles. But then, no one was supposed to be.
Barkimk?
Leia called softly.
I am here, Lady Vega.
Barkimk's voice mewed from across the lobby. There was a rustle from the fronds, and the Nogri warrior stepped into view beside the archway that opened into the corridor leading to their apartment.
All is quiet.
Thank you, Leia said.
Make sure you keep it that way,
Han added as they crossed the lobby. Barkimk bowed his head.
I obey, Han Clan Solo.
Card was lounging in a plash self-molding contour chair in the apartment's conversation circle, a datapad in one hand and a glass of amber liquid in the other as Han keyed the door open.
Ah, there you are,
the smuggler said, closing the datapad and levering himself out of the chair as they filed inside.
I was just thinking of asking Sukasak to try contacting you.
We got a later start than I'd expected,
Leia explained.
I'm sorry.
No need to apologize, Card assured them. The children aren't with you?
They just left this morning with Chewie to go visit his family on Kashyyyk,
Leia told him.
With all that's been happening lately, I thought it would be better for them to be there.
Between their Nogri guard and a planet full of Wookiees, it's hard to imagine any place safer,
Card agreed.
Hello, Calrissian. Nice to see you again.
Yes, Lando said, though you may not think so when we tell you why you're here.
Card's expression didn't change, but Leia could feel a tightening of his emotions.
Really? He said easily. Let's dispense with the formalities then. Sit down and tell me all about it.
I'm sorry,
the screening system at the other end of the comm said, in its maddeningly pleasant mechanical voice.
Communication with the residency request is restricted. I cannot connect you without a proper authorization code.
Tell Counselor Organa Solo that it's an emergency,
Shada said, putting the most intimidating official tone into her voice that she could as she gazed out the TapCap window at the Solo's Incom T-81, sitting there on the Orowood Tower's third-floor landing pad.
I'm calling under the authorization of Admiral Drayson of New Republic Intelligence.
The screening system remained unfazed.
I'm sorry, but I cannot connect you without a proper authorization code.
Grimacing, Shada keyed the comm off. That had been the last verbal gambit in her repertoire, and it had done nothing but get her the same runaround. The same thing every time she tried, and she was beginning to get very tired of it. She'd tried the polite official way first, calling Counselor Organa Solo's office at the Imperial Palace, and, when the screeners there wouldn't let her through either, trying to get into the massive governmental building itself. But with no official status or business or connections to call on, she'd hit meter-thick transparisteel walls at every turn. She'd tried calling the Solo's main home outside the palace next, with the same results. And now she tried to get through to them at their Minari mountain retreat, again with no luck. And with each rebuff, her obviously idealized version of the New Republic had crumbled a little bit more. She'd hoped they would have more to offer her than the life with the Mistral that she'd just turned her back on. It was starting to look more and more like she'd been mistaken. But there was nothing to do now but continue what she'd started, if for no other reason than that there was nowhere left for her to go. So all right. She tried it the polite way and gotten nowhere. Now she would try it the Mistral way. The tower's second floor shopping complex was quite extensive, and it took her no more than 5 minutes to collect the 3 items she needed. 1 minute after that, armed with a length of brocaded white ribbon, a cheap datapad, and a bottle of equally cheap but awesomely strong Dodbury whiskey, she was in the turbolift heading up. It would be a short ride, she knew, but she already had the details mapped out in her mind and set to work with no wasted motions. Popping the cap off the whiskey, she splashed a little of the potent concoction onto the collar of her slightly bedraggled ankle-length dress and then sipped a little into her mouth. Wincing at the tingle, she swished it around while she poured the rest of the bottle into the decorative flower boxes that ran around the upper part of the car. She spat her mouthful back into the bottle again, glad to be rid of it, then turned her attention to the ribbon. The traditional Coruscant wedding hair bow was tricky to tie, but she knew a variant that was quick and simple and looked enough like the real thing to fool anyone but an experienced observer. By the time the doors opened onto the tower's rooftop observation deck, she was ready for her performance. Bottle clutched in one hand, datapad in the other, she stepped out of the car and threw a casual and calculatedly unsteady look around. No one was visible among the deserted tables and chairs and decorative shrubbery. But then the group of personal guards that surrounded Counselor Organa Solo seldom were. Getting a fresh grip on her bottle, she set off in a staggering walk for the edge of the roof. The guard she knew had to be there hadn't made his appearance by the time she reached the chin-high latticework guardrail set into a solid knee-high base.
"So fight, Ravis,"
she muttered to herself in a slurred and despondent voice as she dropped the bottle and datapad onto the roof beside the guardrail.
"You don't wanna, huh? Fine. I can get out of your life, if that's what you want. I can get all the way out."
She broke off with a single underplayed sob. Digging her fingers into the holes of the lattice, she pressed herself against the barrier and twisted her head sideways to peer over and down at the ground below, her senses alert. There was a single whisper of sound from behind her, and then nothing. So they were going to need more from her before they made any move. Fine, she could oblige them. Extracting her fingers from the guardrail, continuing to sob softly under her breath, she retrieved the datapad and set it down on a nearby chair, propping it up to be clearly visible. With slightly fumbling fingers, she pulled the wedding bow out of her hair, kissed it theatrically, and placed it down in front of the datapad. She took another moment to carefully arrange the two items together. Then, squaring her shoulders, she took a deep breath and stepped back to the roof edge. Gripping the lattice again, she climbed up onto the base and swung one leg over the top of the guardrail. Or rather, tried to. Even as she swung the leg up, she heard another whisper of sound, and a hand suddenly grabbed her waist sash, tugging her backward and forcing her to bring her leg back down to maintain her balance.
"Do not do this,"
a gravelly cat-like voice mewed softly from behind her.
"Let me go,"
Shada moaned, letting go of the lattice with her left hand and slapping ineffectually at his arm.
"Let me go. He doesn't care about me. He says so. He doesn't want me anymore. Let me go."
"This is not the way,"
the Nogri said, pulling her gently but firmly.
"Come inside, and we will speak."
"Done with talking,"
Shada muttered, half turning to look down at him and making sure he could smell the whiskey on her breath as she threw a quick glance over the rooftop. No one else was visible.
"Please, let me go,"
she pleaded, grabbing the lattice again with her left hand and pulling upward against his grip.
"Please."
"No,"
the Nogri repeated, pulling back with more strength than she would have thought a creature that small could manage. Her fingers strained against the pull, and without warning, she let go, spinning halfway around as she fell straight at him. The Nogri was fast, all right. By the time she'd rotated far enough around to see him, he'd already moved a step to the side to get out of her way. His free arm came up, ready to catch her shoulders and break her fall. And as she fell into that wiry grip, her hand jabbed hard into the side of his throat. Without a sound, his legs buckled beneath him, and they collapsed together onto the rooftop. For a few seconds she lay there, still sobbing drunkenly, her eyes darting around the rooftop for signs of a backup. But the Nogri was apparently up here alone. which wasn't to say he hadn't checked in before rushing off to save the despondent drunk, bent on self-destruction. If he had, she didn't have much time. If he hadn't, she wouldn't have much more. Stripping off the dress that had concealed her combat jumpsuit, keeping one eye on the turbolift door, she set to work. Card turned his glass around in his hand, his eyes on the remains of his drink as it swirled part way up the side in response to the movement.
"You're sure about all this?" he said.
"I'm sure," Lando said positively. "I searched through what we've got on the old Imperial archives and found every recording they had of Thrawn. There wasn't much, but it definitely looked and sounded like the man I saw."
"Which doesn't mean it couldn't be a trick,"
Han put in, throwing a surreptitious look at Leia. If Card's attitude was all an act, if he was secretly behind this Thrawn sighting of Lando's, then she ought to have pulled the proof of that from his mind by now. But her face had the same grim expression that had been there when Lando first started his story. And even as he watched, her eyes shifted to his, and she shook her head microscopically in response to his unspoken question. Han had thought they were being subtle enough. Apparently not.
"I take it I'm under some suspicion here," Card continued, still studying his glass. "And not just from the Ashuri and their allies. Have I passed the test?"
Han looked at Leia again, in time to see her lip twitch.
"I'm sorry," she said. "For whatever it's worth, I had no doubts myself."
"Thank you."
Card smiled slightly at Han and Lando.
"I won't embarrass either of you by asking if you shared the counselor's confidence."
"I don't like taking anything for granted," Han told him. "It's not like you've ever sworn allegiance to the New Republic or anything."
Card inclined his head.
"You're right, of course. My apologies."
He shifted his gaze to Lando.
"All right, then. Let's begin with the assumption we're all hoping is true. Namely, that you were the victim of a clever trick. First question, how was it done?"
"Shouldn't be all that hard," Han said. "Some facial surgery to make this guy look like Thrawn, then just add in some skin, hair, and eye coloring."
"Facial surgery usually leaves distinctive marks," Lando pointed out. "I know what to look for, and they weren't there. Besides, what about the voice?"
"What about the voice?" Han asked. "Voices can be fake too, you know. We did it ourselves with 3PO once."
"Remember?"
"If the voice was really that accurate, it could have been a human replica droid," Card suggested. "Like the one Prince Shizor of Black Sun used to have."
Lando shook his head.
"It wasn't just the voice, Card, or the face, or anything else you could look at. It was, I don't know. There was a presence there, a hidden power and confidence I don't think any droid could fake. It was him. It had to be."
"Could it have been a clone, then?" Card persisted.
"Thrawn could easily have taken one or more of the cloning tanks out of Mount Tantis before it was destroyed."
"I've been wondering about that, too," Leia said. "It could also explain where the clones Luke sensed at Iphigen came from."
"A clone of Thrawn would be dangerous enough," Lando agreed tightly. "But turn it around a minute. Couldn't it just as easily have been a clone sitting on the Chimera's bridge at Bilbringi? What if Thrawn had anticipated everything that was going to happen? Everything. And made the necessary arrangements?"
Card swished his drink around a little more in his glass.
"Then why did he sit back and let the Empire collapse when his leadership could very likely have saved it?" he asked. "No. If he really was alive, he must have been incapacitated by his wound and gone off somewhere to heal."
"That's pretty much what he implied to Myatami and me," Lando agreed. "He implied he'd been off recovering."
"Unless that's just what he wanted you to think," Leia warned. "Maybe he was simply off doing something else instead."
"Instead of protecting the Empire?" Han objected. "That doesn't make sense."
Abruptly, Card set his glass down on the low table beside his chair.
"All right, then. Let's assume the worst case. That really was Thrawn you saw. And that he's back and out for blood. Why suddenly make an appearance now? And why just to you and Senator Maya Tamia instead of all of Coruscant?
Probably to create exactly the situation we're now in,
Leia said.
The tension level in the Senate has jumped straight to the ceiling, with a tremendous amount of animosity and suspicion being focused on the Diamala, and by extension, to everyone on that side of the Ka'amas issue.
With a hint that Gavrison might not want to resolve the crisis thrown in just to stir things up a little more, Lando added. I hear some of the senators are already complaining that he's been dragging his hooves on the whole question of reparations for the Ka'amasi.
Han grimaced. The Bothans' financial crisis.
He's doing the best he can, he told Lando.
Maybe, Lando said darkly. But it strikes me that there are a lot of other ways Thrawn could have stirred up the government, if that was all he wanted.
What else could he want? Card asked. He surely wouldn't be foolish enough to take on the entire New Republic. Not with only 8 sectors worth of resources at his disposal.
Maybe he's found a new superweapon the Emperor had stashed away somewhere, Lando suggested ominously. Another Death Star. A completed one this time. Or maybe another Sun Crusher. Or something even more dangerous.
Card shook his head. Far-fetched. If there was something like that out there, we surely would have heard of it by now.
There's another point that needs to be made here, Leia said. You talked about him taking on the entire New Republic, but that's only if we could get the entire New Republic together to fight him. With the Ka'amas issue dividing us so strongly, and with the Empire so weak that most people don't even think of it as a threat, that's not a given anymore.
If it ever was, Han said sourly. There was never more than a small fraction of the galaxy actually fighting against the Empire.
And never more than a small fraction of the Empire fighting against us, Lando pointed out, his eyes on Card. I don't think we realized back then just how much of their energy was going to keeping all these little planetary vendettas and rivalries from blowing up in their faces. Now we're in that same situation. And in my opinion, we simply don't have the resources available to take on whatever Thrawn has planned.
That, of course, depends on what he has planned, Card said. He was eyeing Lando closely, Han noticed suddenly. As closely as Lando was eyeing him. So what do you suggest as your next move?
Our next move, Lando said, leaning on the word, is to get this blasted Ka'amas issue out of the way, so we can focus on Thrawn. And that means finding out exactly who the guilty Bothans were.
That could be a problem, Card said, his voice studiously calm. As far as I know, the Imperials have only 2 complete sets of records left. One at the Ubiquitrate base at Yaga Minor, the other at the current Imperial capital on Bastion.
I don't suppose you'd happen to know where Bastion is, Leia said.
I'm afraid not, Card said, glancing at her and then returning his attention to Lando. Bastion's proper name is one secret the Imperials have managed to keep.
I wasn't necessarily talking about the Imperials, Lando said. I was thinking someone else might have the records we're looking for.
Han blinked at Lando. Suddenly, the other's insistence that he join them here tonight for their talk with Card was taking on a whole new dimension.
You mean that Card?
I don't have the records, Calrissian, Card said. If I did, I'd have offered them to you long before now.
I know that,
Lando said, his voice heavy with significance.
I was referring to a different source entirely.
Who also probably doesn't have them, Card said coldly. Lando's expression didn't change.
But who might?
For a pair of heartbeats, the two men continued to gaze at each other. Han threw a frown at Leia, saw his same puzzlement mirrored in her own face.
Is there something here we need to know about?
He asked carefully.
No, Lando said. Or maybe I should say, not yet.
Leia, Garrison and I need to have a short talk, Card said, getting abruptly to his feet. Is there a place where we can have some privacy?
You can use the boy's bedroom,
Leia said, pointing down the hallway.
Last door on the left.
Thank you. Card gestured Lando to the hallway. After you, Garrison.
Shada had added an extra anchor to her safety line about 2 meters above her, on the assumption that if and when the Nogri got reinforcements up to the rooftop, they might simply cut the line without bothering to haul her up first for the formality of questioning. Now, dangling 100 meters above the ground, she eased her low-light eyepiece around the edge of the darkened window beside her and peered inside. It was a child's bedroom. A children's bedroom, she corrected herself, spotting the second bed pushed against the far wall. Currently unoccupied, and since none of the 3 Solo children had followed their parents out of the airspeeder, it was reasonable to assume the room would stay that way. Replacing the eyepiece into its jumpsuit pocket, she pulled out one of her 3 Xena M6W9 molecular stilettos and extended its invisibly slender blade. Like a lightsaber, a molecular stiletto could cut through nearly anything. Unlike a lightsaber, though, the Xena's blade was incredibly delicate. A quick thrust against an assailant nearly always resulted in a broken blade. Along with the dead assailant, of course. And even the most painstakingly careful cutting job was as likely as not to end up ruining the tool. Fortunately, the task facing her wasn't going to be large enough to push the odds. With most buildings on Coruscant, she would have had to cut away an entire window to get inside. But the Oralwood's designers had incorporated traditional Alderaanian swing-out panels to allow for free airflow. All she had to do was maneuver the stiletto blade between the panels and slice through the catch, and she would be in. After, of course, finding and disabling whatever alarms the Nokri had installed. That task turned out to be easier than she'd expected. The window carried only a single alarm, ranged to watch for incoming airspeeders. Apparently, it hadn't occurred to the Nogri that someone might be crazy enough to rappel down from the rooftop the way she had. Though, of course, to be fair, they had put a guard up there. 2 minutes later, she was inside the darkened room, pulling the window closed behind her and listening hard. There were the usual soft mechanical noises of any modern dwelling, along with the muffled sounds of conversation coming from elsewhere in the apartment. The words were impossible to decipher through the closed door, but she could hear at least 4 distinct voices. She stood just inside the door, frowning with sudden indecision. She'd seen Solo and Organa Solo and their droid arrive in their T-81, and had spotted Calrissian waiting for them. But who was the 4th voice? Some random friend who'd happened to drop in? Hardly. A business associate of Calrissian's? Maybe. Except that he'd been skulking alone in the shadows before the Solos arrived. One thing was sure. Given how furtive all 3 of them had been behaving outside, this was clearly a meeting they'd taken great pains to keep secret. A meeting she doubted any of them would appreciate being crashed by a total stranger. Abruptly, she tensed. The conversation had paused, and in its place was a new sound. Footsteps, heading her direction. She was across the room in 4 quick strides, kneeling beside the bed by the far wall. It was a spaceship-style bed, with storage compartments filling the space beneath the mattress itself. But she hadn't planned on hiding under it anyway. Getting a grip on the storage handles, she pulled. There must have been a lot of junk in those drawers. Even with Mistral-honed muscles behind the tug, the bed moved barely 25 centimeters away from the wall. But it would be enough. And at any rate, with the footsteps already paused outside her door, it would have to do. Lunging up from her kneeling position, she half-dived, half-rolled across the bed, and slid silently down on her side into the narrow gap. She just made it. Even as her shoulder and hip settled against the cool floor,
The bedroom door slid open, and two sets of footsteps came inside.
The glow panel blazed on, and the door closed again.
We've had an agreement, Carician.